I'm going to talk more about probably miscommunication around statistical results, but I wanted to kind of go over the math behind the 2009 breast cancer screening recommendations from the United States Preventive Services Task Force. And they are not new, actually. They're almost a year old, and many people have not let that fact go by. I liked what Jonathan Fielding said. I work in public health. I'm sad to announce I have no financial confidence. So I'm going to go over three areas: the meta-analysis of benefit, surveillance data on harms, and modeling for evaluation of age and interval. So that's the math underneath the recommendation. This is the meta-analysis. From my standpoint, this is really all you need to know about mammography in women under 50, because this is what we have. This is 8 randomized controlled trials, and I have to tell you, in the world of prevention, that is an embarrassment of randomized controlled trials. We don't have 8 RCTs for any other screening test. This is a plethora of data. If you know how to read forest plots, you know that this side favors screening. So a 0.5 would be a 50% mortality reduction. This side favors control. 2 would be 2 times the mortality. The box, the size of the box is the size of the study. The whiskers are the confidence interval. Confidence interval passes the relative risk of 1, there is no statistical significance. Here's the name of the studies down the side. The last study, the AIDS trial out of the UK in 2006, was the only one specifically sized and designed to look for mortality reduction associated with screening in this age group. The others had wider age intervals, and these were age analyses. And what you see is a lot of studies that kind of align around this 50% or 15% mortality reduction. I'd also point out that no single study reached statistical significance by itself, so we still don't have a single study that showed benefit. However, when you put them together in meta-analyses, these studies combine very well, they're very homogeneous, you get a relative risk that excludes 1. We then translated that into a traditional number we use. The number needed to, this number needed to invite for screening to prevent 1 breast cancer. And you notice for the different age intervals, the number is different. It's different for 2 reasons. 1 is the incidence of breast cancer gets higher as you go older, so prevalence drives everything. And then as you get older, the test itself actually gets better. So as the normal breast is, glandular elements are replaced by fat, false positives go down, true positives go up. 1904 is the number needed to invite to save 1 cancer death or prevent 1 cancer death. There is no test in our portfolio that has that high a number needed to invite. In fact, there's no other test in our portfolio that has a higher number than 1339, which is the 50 to 59-year-old age group. These are really high numbers, and I think some of the misinterpretation said, well, I don't think it's worth screening 1,904 women to save 1 life, which isn't what we said. We said 1,904 women need to be screened in order to save 1 life. I also point out that this is when you really need to push screening because it becomes really a very good test at that age. So we looked at RCTs for benefits. When we looked for harms, we could turn to observational studies because once you start doing observational studies, that's actually a legitimate way to count harms on the other side. So this is from the Breast Cancer Screening Consortium. This is based on roughly 2 million women, 7.5 million mammograms, and these are outcomes per screening round per 1,000 women screened. And so here are all the results. Here's the positive. Now, recognize these are just detection rates. These aren't lives saved. And if you have a 15% mortality reduction, that means roughly 5 women destined to die of breast cancer without mammography. With mammography, 4 women die anyway, and 1 doesn't. So that's what 15% means. So this 1.8 is just detection rate. Here are the harms, though. You have 1 false negative, 97 false positive mammograms with additional images as 84 per 1,000, 9.3 biopsies per 1,000. You think about screening annually for 10 years in the age interval, you can almost multiply those by 10, except they're not quite independent. So you get actually a common number of false positives. We've had a fair amount of criticism about the 15%, because observational studies with their biases find different percentages. The bottom line is this analysis by Nelson shows it really doesn't matter in the younger age group because the prevalence is low. So you always, prevalence drives everything. The lower the prevalence, there's just not a separation between the different mortality reductions. Okay, so that's benefits, harms, and now the bulk of what we're going to talk about is modeling. So this is the CISNET modeling network. They reported to us from Cancer Intervention and Surveillance Modeling through an AHRQ contract, and all graphs and tables are from the ACP. These are a really good group of scientists. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Erasmus in the Netherlands, Georgetown University Medical Center, Harvard and Wisconsin worked together, MD Anderson and Stanford. And each one of these took their modeling team and basically the same inputs, but with slightly different assumptions, and each gave us a model. What are the basic principles of modeling? So each of six models, so six centers, is used to predict what happens with a specific screening strategy, and the baseline strategy is no screening. The results for each model is based on the number of mammograms done. And the reason we pick the number of mammograms done is that that's what correlates with harms. So the more mammograms you do, the more false positives you get. The more false positives you get, the more additional images and the more biopsies for false positive mammograms. So the harms are tied to the actual number of mammograms. So that's one output. And the other is the percent reduction in mortality or potentially life years gained. So that's the way the models work. And what it does is gives us the ability to calculate the expected number of breast cancer deaths in a cohort of women age 40 across an entire lifetime. So what we do is we create a hypothetical cohort of women age 40 and then follow them forward in time. Here are the strategies that were tested. They were tested both in terms of biennial and annual, so that there are two models for every strategy, and it's just different starting and stopping age ranges. Remember, what we wanted was guidance on when to start and when to stop. Oh, we also wanted guidance on interval. And since we don't have studies that include those inputs, we asked the modelers to kind of fill in the gaps. Here are the inputs from the different sources. So we use the Breast Cancer Surveillance Consortium, the SEER Registry, also the Connecticut Tumor Registry, and the Berkeley Mortality Database. And each database had a kind of a slightly different array of inputs available to the modeling. I'm going to come back to this, but we assume 100% of women are screened and that all women detected with cancer are treated with current practice guidelines. That's important because the outcomes of the model are all optimistic. The models also included specific inputs or also called intermediate outputs. So the modelers brought in preclinical detectable times, lead time, dwell time within the stages of disease, that's how long the tumor has to grow before it moves to the next stage, and stage distribution in unscreened versus screened women. So they brought in different inputs as well. There were some differences between the models. A large one was kind of an estimate of how much DCIS would actually progress. So you all know this is a controversial area. Not all DCIS progresses. We still don't know how to tell the ones that are from the ones that aren't. So it's kind of a clinical conundrum. So here's the base case. Expected median lifetime for mortality for a woman alive at age 40 who undergo no mammography is 3%. So what that means is if I have 1,000 women alive at age 40 and I follow them all till death and I count up all the deaths from all the causes, 30 of those deaths will be from breast cancer. And I want to pause just for a moment for that number to sink in, because that's all the better you can do. In 1,000 women, you have 30 breast cancer deaths you can work with to try to decrease. Why is that not 1 in 8? 1 in 8 is a heavily nuanced number, which if I was going to say the whole phrase, I would say 1 in 8 women who live to age 90 will get breast cancer sometime during her life. That's a completely different phrase from proportional mortality. and actually extends the age well past the average age of death for American women, which means half of women will never have the ability to get to 1 in 8, and then actually talks about incidence, not mortality. So then we have to decide what outcomes should be modeled. We can look at the percent or number of deaths averted, disease-specific mortality, all-cause mortality, life years gained, and quality-adjusted life years gained. In working with the modelers, the cleanest cut for us was kind of the percent and number of deaths averted. We did look briefly at life years gained as another analysis. Disease-specific mortality and all-cause mortality kind of doesn't get to the answers that we want. So this is what we really decided to look at. Quality-adjusted life years, you could do analysis as well, but then you have to bring in assumptions about how do you discount a year after treatment for breast cancer. So the cleanest approach we felt was to not do that. So what does modeling result give you? Well, a screening strategy that has the same or worse outcomes as one that uses less mammography, that was our currency of the harms, is considered dominated. So what it means is you don't see that strategy. It says I can get to the same result with fewer mammograms. So you never see that strategy occur. For each model, if you draw a line along the non-dominated strategies, you form this thing called the efficiency frontier. That is the point at which you get the most benefit for the most harm. The most efficient way to reduce mortality with breast cancer with the least harms would be pick one of the screening strategies along the efficiency frontier. This is kind of the raw data that looks at average number of screening exams per strategy and reduction in breast cancer mortality by model. And these stand for the different modeling issues. But I think it's actually easier to look at the graphs. These are the 6 graphs. One of the things I want to point out is that the farther there's an inflection point where you get a lot of benefit, and I'll show a graph in a minute. This is the percent mortality reduced. This is the number of mammograms. There's an inflection point where the increase in mammograms and the increase in benefits level off, and they do that for all but one of the 2 graphs. This is the exemplar model from Stanford. This is an efficiency frontier. The dots represent the different strategies. So this is biannual 60 to 69. This is biannual 50 to 79. And what we do is we can look at and say, at this point, at this strategy, we would have 3.4 deaths averted per 1,000 women. This strategy, 4.9 deaths averted per 1,000 women. So from going from 60 to 69, biannual 50 to 69, I pick up that many more, and then 50 to 69, 5.4 deaths averted per 1,000 women. So you can see how the modeling frontier gives you the results on how you can pick the strategy, usually at the inflection point where you get the most benefit for the least amount of harm. Now that's the 50 to 74. So the general conclusions from modeling was there was remarkable consistency across the models. I would point that the clinical trial data, which we actually looked at as well, and the modeling data kind of come up with the same conclusions. There is a subtle difference between number needed to screen and number needed to invite, although when you do the analysis, you come up with roughly the same results, and conclusions were the same when we used life years gained instead of life. So the assumptions you have to take is these are assumptions. Benefits in models exceed the benefits in trials, which exceed benefits in practice. So you never get as good as the model. They assume everyone has insurance, all comply with the recommendations, all treatment is according to the state of the science protocols, and everyone finishes all the treatments, which are things that don't happen. Clinical trials are less than perfect adherence crossover, but they deal with select patient populations who are generally compliant and generally healthy. Real life ends up at the bottom because many patients aren't eligible for studies. So here's the base case and then screening biennial. So we talked about the 3%. Without screening, 30 deaths would be from breast cancer, and if I screen from 50 to 79, I decrease that 30 by 7, we which means 23 women still die from breast cancer. Now, the 7 women still die. They just die from something else. That's the way life table analysis works. So the incremental benefit across the studies is starting at 40 to 640 instead of 50 is about 1 life. So in a cohort of 1,000 women, starting screening at age 40 will increase the number of deaths out of 30 averted from 7 to 8. That's the benefit. And that's where I think the task force looking at this and the 15% mortality reduction and the 1904 number needed to screen said the total benefit is small. Not zero, not harmful, small. So that's the best you can do over the models. Well, what about the harms? So screening 1,000 women, the same 1,000 now, this is over a lifetime. We go from 9,000 to 14,000 mammograms. False positives go from 780 to 1,250. Biopsies for false positives goes from 55 to 88. So we were looking at the harms versus the benefits. And this, we take small harms and we subtract common but non-fatal harms, and we're still left with net small. What about biennial versus annual? These are all the models looking at biennial versus annual, and the range of estimates are 67 to 95. They're mainly over the 85 to 95 range. Here's the main interval, which basically says you get 80 to 90% of the benefit with annual versus biennial. You could keep doing annual, and you'll save almost a life, an additional life year, but you'll have twice the number of false positives, mammograms, and unnecessary biopsies. We did extend to age 70 and over. We realized that it didn't disappear at age 70. Modeling actually supported it. We were uncomfortable going higher than 75 where there are no data and there are competing mortality issues. We also know in older women, overdiagnosis or breast cancers that will never affect a woman's life will increase. So the translation at the end was a B rating for women age 50 to 74, at least moderate certainty of a moderate net benefit. A C recommendation for women 40 to 49, moderate certainty of a small net benefit. And an I for women 75 and older. And what I would say is that I think where the task force and advocates around breast cancer screening probably disagree isn't so much the math, but that we think this is the point at which a woman should kind of understand and weigh the risks and benefits before making a decision. And this is where just recommending is sufficient. And I think other groups pick different cutoffs. Questions? Yes, sir. So the question is, are there studies that look at cost effectiveness of these strategies? And since the task force doesn't use cost in its analyses, we didn't specify that. CISNET could do that if they chose. I will say that prevention priorities, I don't know if you saw that analysis, did do cost effectiveness of breast cancer screening across the age intervals. And I think based on preventable burden and that benefit, it ended up number 12 on the priority list. You couldn't actually do the top 10 prevention priorities and still have mammography. Right. So you had to go down farther. Part of that's the cost effectiveness. Yep.
You said advice versus screening is practically the same. Why is that?
Because in the studies, almost all the women who are invited came. But on the other standpoint, in a previous lecture, and people heard me say this, in number needed to invite gives you the best unbiased estimate of effectiveness. So it gets over the healthy woman effect. It balances out over diagnosis, and you have less impact of lead time and length time bias. So it is the preferred study design for an unbiased estimate of effect of a screening test. Yes, a woman.
Are you assuming that the biopsies are all red properly? Because there's false positives in the biopsies.
Yeah, well, that's a good question that I'd have to ask the modelers about whether or not the eventual mortality, of course, is caught a little bit later by BCSC, but I think that's a good question. I don't actually know the answer to that. Great question. Right here and then.
So these calculations are all based on age, that with that high risk, but one could consider individual risk factors like family history to classify people at higher versus lower risk and make a decision. For example, for the people who are 40 to 49, some of them may be at higher risk because they have family history.
What an outstanding idea. In fact, CISNET and BCSC wrote an ERA grant and are hopefully completing that analysis even as we speak to try to give clinicians and women some guidance for who's at increased risk, who's more likely to benefit between 40 to 49, to make that informed decision a little richer. I can already tell you that the closer you get to 50, the better it works. It's just you have to pick a cutoff somewhere. And the task force used that kind of traditional controversial cutoff at age 50. So there are lots of things you can bring into play. Risk, I think differences by subgroups, so triple negatives being more prominent in African-American women, that's another issue you could bring into guiding your decision. I don't have a study of mammography utility in triple negative breast cancer, but I could use that information in shared decision making.